Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hi, I'm murderous doc Megan Rosati.
And I'm weirdo urban legend Danielle Radford. Welcome to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast, a Stage 13 original series that is an immersion into the unique worlds created by each episode of the hit anthology series on the CW and Netflix.
In each episode of our podcast, we sit down with the Two Sentence Horror Stories creators, as well as celebrity guests and social activists, to deep dive into the social and cultural issues explored on the cult series
and the carefully intricate craft that went into the making of each episode.
This is Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast.
I can help you, Father. I have connections.
You're too late for all that. You stole the one thing he needs to survive. You were there the day we got the call. You even took us out to a fancy dinner to celebrate, but then you went behind our backs and took what was rightfully ours.
No, hold on.
He's dying because of you.
The clip you just heard at the top was from the season 3 episode, The Killer Inside. Before we get into The Killer Inside, Megan, how are you?
I'm good, Danielle. Actually, what I liked about this episode is that I'm a little bit of a medical documentary stan. Yeah, I'm one of those. My sisters and I would, you know, turn on TLC Discovery Cable and watch I Swallowed What and My 600-Pound Tumor and anything where people are conjoined and there's some kind of weird growth happening. So I was all in for the surgery horror of this episode.
I don't like gore and stuff, but like I do like Dr. Pimple Popper. Anyway, so today we're discussing the episode The Killer Inside, where a surgeon is forced to take drastic measures to save her father when following the rules does not succeed.
You're young and strong. My father, he's out of time because we live in a world where your money is worth more than his life.
You can check out this full episode on the CW and the CW app. Today on the podcast, we're going to have a discussion about healthcare inequity and where that leaves members of our society when we value profit over patients. Plus, we'll get into the behind-the-scenes details on the season 3 episode, The Killer Inside.
Joining our conversation today, we have the writer of the episode, Sahej Sethi. Sahej is an Indian-American screenwriter currently developing the TV adaptation of the novel City of Ghosts with David Lowery for Fox Searchlight TV and Disney+.
We'll also be joined by the director of the episode, Heidi Simon. Heidi has directed episodes of Queen Sugar and is also a producer for NPR's Fresh Air.
And later on in the show, we'll be joined by both Tommy Pico and Drea Washington, horror fans and hosts of the horror podcast Scream Queen.
First up, Sahej Sethi and Heidi Simon. Hello, Sahej, and hi, Heidi. Thank you both for joining us so much today. Sahej, you have returned to the Two Sentence Horror Stories universe for season 3 after your work on season 2's Instinct and Imposter episodes. I love them. I've watched them a million times. What did you learn from last season that you were able to bring into season 3?
You know, one thing I really love about the show is that you shouldn't be afraid to have a voice and to bring your own experiences and history into this. And I think that, you know, season 2 really taught me that we had, you know, obviously the room was great, but even our, you know, executives at the network were great. They were really excited about that. I wanted to, you know, tell a story with my last episode entirely from a woman's point of view. So I kind of took that into season 3. And I was like, well, now something that I've done a lot in my writing recently is making sure that we don't always tell the same story, that it's not like a minority and like, you know, evil white person is against them. Like I wanted to tell more, you know, intricate, like more like detailed stories, more complex stories, and allow people of color to have more shades, you know, than just victim. Right. That really mattered to me with The Killer Inside.
I love that. And that personal point of view is part of why Instinct was one of my favorite episodes, because you are so good at putting the viewer like in the mindset of anxiety of your protagonist. Like I'm always dead ass behind their point of view. And so in this episode, The Killer Inside, you kind of did the same trick, but to a different end. And I thought that was such a cool evolution of like your storytelling point of view. So this episode really resonated with me on multiple levels. I thought it was so beautiful. And Heidi, I want to talk to you about that later. But also, I was talking a little bit about this with Danielle earlier. The theme of medical inequity is something that I've personally experienced. So last year, my mom had a health crisis where she went to the hospital, had surgery, and the surgery was botched, and she almost died. And actually, the botchedness of the surgery was more damaging to her health than the original reason why they operated, right? And my mom is a skinny, rich, white lady. She, you know, she's doing okay, but they ignored her pain because, you know, many reasons, but they ignored her pain. There were no signs that, like, things were going wrong. And it was only because my dad is a doctor and fiercely advocated for her on her side of, you know, on her bedside, that I think she's alive right now. And that really shook me because I was like, man, imagine if she had been fat. Imagine if she had been Black. Imagine if she had been poor. Imagine if she had been a non-native English speaker. Do you know what I mean? Like, imagine if, like, she had all this privilege and it still took a trained freaking doctor who was married to her to get her the care she needed. And I found that really chilling. So that's kind of where I came to see this episode. So what inspired you to address this, like, issue of medical inequity?
First of all, I'm so sorry that you and your family and your mother especially had to go through that. So I hope
She's doing fine. She's totally recovered now. Thank God. That's the only reason why I'm sharing this anecdote, is because it all turned out fine.
That's awesome.
But the experience has still, like, you know, shook our family. So sorry. Of course. She's okay. Thanks.
Of course. You know, it's always been an issue that I wanted to talk about. And, you know, something that we always think about in this room especially is, well, where can our ideas just jump from? What are little things that, you know, we can think of? And I always sometimes look at urban legends because they're so succinct. So, right? And like, who has not heard about the urban legend about the guy goes on a date, wakes up, kidney's gone?
Oh my God. I was not going to bring this up, but I was so excited when I watched this because it was the first thing.
That was
the first
thing Daniel thought of. I'm like, here's a sad story about my mom. And Daniel's like, have you heard of this urban legend?
The thing of like, oh, you meet the girl and then like, oh, you wake up in a bathtub full of ice and like she writes a note in lipstick, which is like, sorry, dude, we took your kidney. This was like one of the first things I thought of when I watched the episode.
Oh, good. I'm so glad that came through. That like first kernel. I think what I like to do with these kinds of stories is, yes, you want, you know, Two Cents Horror Stories craves a theme that is, you know, socially conscious, that is kind of, you know, something that we can grab onto. But for me, I'm like, I need to also pair that with a very, with a character that you can sink your teeth into as well.
Yeah.
And so that really mattered to me, that Shiraz come across as someone who I felt like surely you could identify with this person.
Right.
And for me, it came from the fact that, you know, I had, my father had several bouts of cancer and, you know, he passed away 2 years ago. And towards the end, there were doctors saying like, you've done everything. There's nothing else you can do. And as a person, like my dad was my guy. Like he and I were each other's person in our family. Yeah. Like, I was like, don't hear that. I refuse to hear that. Yeah. I will get more tests done. I will get more shit done. I will talk to another specialist. I will go sit in that guy's office for 4 hours till he comes sees me. Mm-hmm. I will do everything. Mm-hmm. And there is no concept that there is nothing left to do. And I think that really came into me while I was writing Shiraz, that you will do the step you didn't think you'll take that step, and then you'll see the next step in front of you. You'll take that step and you'll just continue till you can somehow, you know, save this person.
That slippery morality was my another part of this, because you were saying like you want to elevate the representation of people of color beyond just victims and like white people are bad, yeah. but people of color are good. And same, women victims, men not victims. And so what was so cool about this is it like puts you in that, it like subverts that trope, which is what the show does so well, right? But it also allows the character to be more human. Because yeah. I think like we can all do bad things if we think like nobody's the villain of their own story, right? Like everybody mm-hmm. is justified to themselves. And so it was so cool to see this character really just dig in to her motivation, which like was important to her, good or bad. That's up to you, you know? I mean, it's bad. It's bad to steal people's organs.
It's obviously great. Like we not don't great. Advocate killing people, but also like it's one of those things when we talk about like people of color and the way that we deal with thing. Long story short, I got hit by a bus. I was walking down the street, bus hit me and my body. Ambulance came. They gave me, because there is this idea that women of color have like a better pain tolerance than other people.
Yep.
Yeah, they just gave me Advil. So,
no.
I really identified with this.
Are you kidding me?
Aside from obviously knowing the urban legend. Yeah. This was one of those ones where I was like, yeah, they don't treat us well.
Right. And it's like, there's literal studies where they racialize people's pain and are like, they just, you know, people of color complain a lot. So you have to give them less pain medication because they're known to be complainers. And it's like, or are you advocating for yourself in a system that is like meant to silence you? Anyway, Danielle, mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that happened to you. That's so messed up.
No. Like that's exactly it. Where it's like this thing where it's like there have been studies where they've said, oh, darker skinned black people, darker skinned people can tolerate more pain than other people.
Yeah.
That's like wild. So Heidi, your career path has like gone all over the place. You started as a journalist. You produced at NPR's Fresh Air, which I do love. God, I love Fresh Air. And then had your feature film debut with Namor, which is so gorgeous. And it's this for those of you who haven't seen it, no spoilsies. But it is this drama that is like about cultural assimilation and like classism and like all of these things. So I want to talk a little bit about your experience in television and film. How were you able to make this transition?
Well, you know, I think writing and directing a feature is... you come out of that a different person. I equate it to childbirth. It's like there's before and there's after, and you've just sort of suffered in a very particular way. but it also equips you to do a lot of things. It gives you the ability to work on a deadline. It gives you the ability to direct with little to no resources, to get performances quickly because you're losing the light, like things like that. So I think all of that deadline pressure is very conducive to directing television. I also love television. I don't have any highbrow, lowbrow divisions. I think television is so compelling. I love the story. And it's a way to make a living as well, let's be honest. So, I have found that I watch more television than movies at this point. I'm ashamed to admit that, but I do. And so
shame in your game. What works for us, you know?
Honestly, like this is a great era of television.
It really is.
Especially with like dealing with this era of COVID. But even before that, like this era of prestige television has been like 10 years. He's like really good.
So go ahead. It's just a challenging medium. I think I also like with this particular episode, I got to use so many tools of just, you know, especially that first, 9 minutes of the episode. It's about subversion. It's about like taking all of those things you think about this woman.
Yeah.
And what you would imagine it has happened to her, and then just subverting that at the end. I mean, for a director, that's like
tool. Like all of that is just magic for me, because I'm like, oh, we can do this with clothing. We can do that with lighting. We can do that with makeup. It's just endless opportunities with the props, of just, you, even down to the shoe, you know, in that very beginning where we have
shoe,
like deciding on that ballet slipper. I was like, oh, you have to just immediately kind of tap into like that ballet shoe. What does that mean? What does that signify? Just innocence, purity, you know, something got destroyed, something happened. And it's just a lot of fun.
It's non-threatening too. Like it's the most like demure feminine version of the shoe. Like you can't walk in frickin' winter outside with that shoe.
Precisely. No, that you couldn't. You said it better than, you know, you said it better than I could have said it. And so when costumes was like, what's she going to wear? I was like, oh my God, of course it's like, that's one more way to subvert the trope, you know?
You have this horror instinct inside of you. So what drew you to doing an episode of Two Sentence Horror Story and this particular episode?
Well, it's funny. I can't say that I knew I was going to get this episode, but I do feel like there is some kind of meaning in, or some kind of reason that I got Sahej's episode, because you know, my father also died of cancer. And so I think I didn't know that about your father. And I just remember it was terminal cancer. It was lung cancer. And we went to that place, and I was the primary caretaker at some point, because I, and so I was, I just was there for a lot of it. And I think, it's interesting. I really believe that you kind of are drawn to the things that pull those experiences out, or experiences you can draw from. And that was definitely something I kept thinking about with this episode. I was also very close to my father. We had a lot of those, you know, conversations, even when he was in chemo. It was just, I will never forget those times. So very painful times, but also you draw on all of that when you're directing and working with the actors and the story. So I also just love horror that has rooted in a purpose. There's a lot of horror that doesn't have a purpose, that just feels, I don't know, senseless.
Yeah.
And so for me, I have to have work or direct work that feels like it's about something. And you can't get more to that than with Two Sentence Horror Stories.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. Just like listening to both of y'all talk about like your inspirations and like how the story inspired you is poignant and amazing. And we appreciate you being this open on the podcast. I just think, like, obviously other than this episode being really amazing, I don't know, it's really like eye-opening to talk to people who have found ways to channel that kind of loss into creativity, because like it's not easy.
Yeah
I've done that. It's like not easy.
I will say, I, you know, on our side, Heidi's name came up very early when we were writing this episode. Lisa Morales and I, the showrunner, who, by the way, I have to give a shout out to, she really strengthened this episode and made it like made it what it is. So I, you know, this was really a team effort in many ways. And she had mentioned Heidi, and because we were really worried, you know, the show isn't known for an episode where a full first act is like hardly any dialogue, you know, where it's really pulling out that tension, really, like there's a subtlety to this episode that, you know, there are like, you know, that like a lot of the episodes are beautiful and full and colorful. And this one was really living in some very demure moments. And so both of us were like, ooh, who are we going to get to do this? And she brought up Heidi's name really early. And I was so excited because I'd seen bits and pieces of her work. I knew of her from Fresh Air, and I was thrilled because I thought, this is a person who will understand the emotional tension and emotional horror of this piece. And that, I think she did, you know, a stupendous job with that.
Thank you. And I have to say another shout out to Lisa as well, because we had worked together. I directed an episode of Queen Sugar and she wrote that episode. And so we just stayed in touch as friends, and she just wanted to work together again. I love working with her, so I have to give her all of that credit. And and yeah, yeah, I think
I'm very much a Lisa stan. Like, I love Shameless.
Love her.
And yeah.
The seasons of Shameless specifically that she was on. Yeah. But I like, we did an interview with her and I tried not to nerd out, but I probably will. In because literally I am such a stupid mega fan of the work she did on Shameless. But I didn't bring it
up. Well, I'm going to bring it back to how much of a mega fan I am for this episode, because exactly what you were talking about, Sahej, with the silent first act, right? The emotional tension of that beat. That's what I dig. And it was so cool. Like, it's very, very tough to get that kind of space and dread and tension in a 20-minute episode of television. So the fact that I think you guys pulled it off, like, really was such an accomplishment. And, you know, Heidi, I want to ask you, Sahej was talking about the emotional subtlety and all that. And I really thought visually this episode was incredibly cinematic. Like, I thought it was formally beautiful. I thought the lighting was gorgeous. I thought, like, the way the shots were composed was next level. And I could really pay attention to it because there wasn't so much, like, hard A plot ticking along, right? It was about the feeling of being in that and then the reveal at the end. So as a, you know, a filmmaker who's Egyptian-American and a woman, do you think people receive the aesthetics of your work differently? Like, for example, I hear a lot of white male filmmakers get heralded for their technical brilliance, right? They're like, oh, the gorgeous cinematography and like the formal,
which is true.
And like a lot of people of color or women filmmakers get heralded for their emotional intelligence. And so do you feel like you have to work harder to establish yourself as like a formally competent director? Or like, how do you think your identity informs the way the aesthetics of your work are received?
I mean, I think, you know, it always, the work is the what's most compelling, and the questions that I was asking with our DP of this episode, Guy Pools, were just, that's why I do what I do, is figuring out these problems. Like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? But yeah, I think more people just want to talk about, less about their identity and more about the work and how hard it is. Because I approach, you know, I'm obviously competent. I went to film school. Not that you need to go to film school, but I've studied a lot. I've watched a lot. I just still do it today. You know, I did it with Namor. It's like a very, I did it with my short film premiered at Cannes. Like, I'm constantly working on this, so I can obviously speak to the craft of this. But yeah, I think conversations can sometimes get diluted to the very, it just can get simplified. And and I think there's so much more. And this episode really is, it is technical, and it's also about the emotional.
Yeah.
And I think that's what was difficult about this, because as much as it is, feels like a Hitchcock for the first chapter, it also has to hinge on a father-daughter relationship, which was really, we really had to flesh out. You know, it took some time with the actors. It really took some time.
I tend to be in these kind of, in Two Cents Horror Stories, I think I'm always the one, I'm like, give me the least amount of special effects you can. I want to just do humans being horrible, like, or just being the horror of being a human. You know, like that tends to be where I always go, which I think they're always thrilled about. They're like, fantastic. We give you no budget. that's definitely what they said for Instinct. Instinct, they were like, Sahej, you get $20 and like an empty apartment. Enjoy.
It was
a dream. Go to Vancouver, figure it out.
But I say that to my they're like, what's the thing that scares you the most, Megan? And I'm like, a closet door slightly open. Like, dead ass. That is what gives me nightmares. And it's so simple and so, but like, it's what that is imbued with, right?
Yeah. And at night right now, my SimpliSafe, I don't know if you guys have these monitors, they are pressed against your wall. If you touch it, it lights up. Middle of the night, my husband's obviously completely asleep. It just lights up. I'm like, I'm dying. Something's happening. I'm completely dead. Nothing's happened. Not a noise. It just lights up for a second. And I'm like, oh, that's it. Thank you for my 35 years.
Well, I'm dead. Oh, that's how I feel every time. Like, there's someone like walking through my hallway, or I'm not. It's 3. I've had a couple of people like try my door because they thought it was the wrong door. Mm-hmm. And I died. Wow. I'm dead now. I'm a corpse.
Meanwhile, I live in Hollywood. So there are just people screaming, like men screaming at random hours of the night. And I'm like, oh, it's the guy down the street. Just totally. I could be murdered in my bed and I would just think it was like, you know, another Tuesday. Back to the episode. So, again, the way that you subvert those tropes, right? So Kareem represents somebody like you could look at as the victim. I mean, he does get captured by Shiraz, but compared to, you know, you sprinkle in these facts that are evidence of his privilege throughout the episode, right? Like he's rich. He was able to get the, it's implied he was able to get the organ from the, spoilers, watch the episode, the organ from the clinic that was meant for her dad. And so the power is really interesting, right? So what were you trying to say, or were you trying to say something about healthcare inequity and who deserves care in our current system?
100%. That was a huge part of this for me. You know, we always aim to tell some kind of larger, have some kind of larger theme in every episode. And this was one I've actually been wanting to get into the series probably since season one. Because similarly, my mother's was a physician. And, you know, just hearing from her as hearing a lot of sides of it from her. She was at one point there. She was one of three female cardiologists in the entire Chicago area. You know, like that's kind of a lot. And so hearing the side of like female physicians who can't get their voice across, but even more so because she was someone from another country, my family's from India, you know, she was very, her patients ended up being very lucky that if they didn't speak English as a first language, if they were specifically South Asian immigrants, they had someone who could advocate or just listen to them accurately, you know, and hear them accurately. That alone is huge. And even seeing my husband's care, similar to what you were saying, Megan, like we had so much knowledge. I had read every like NHS article I could. I was asking about lipitine. I've already lost it. Something about lipotriglyceride, something, his levels every day, you know? And if we weren't doing that, there was so much that was being put to the wayside, you know, that like, I think something that people really need to realize is that our healthcare system is privatized, which means if you are not bringing in a value that is financial, they don't care as much about you. It is not in their interest to care about you. Their interest isn't your health. And that's something that people really don't seem to grasp. I think we have this ideological view of like, you know, all of these systems, but all of these systems really aren't in place that way. So, you know, something that, you know, next episode I get, I want her to cut out the kidney of the guy who did this, of the administrator who let him have the goddamn kidney. Because that really is a side of it.
Lipstick on the mirror. I totally get it.
Well, exactly. You know, my dad was also a doctor, physician. He's retired now and he's Puerto Rican. And, you know, we were living in Connecticut. He was practicing in Hartford. There's a weirdly big Puerto Rican population in Hartford, Connecticut. And people would come in, native Spanish speakers, and he would be able to speak Spanish to them. And the way that changed how they were able to interact with him was like something that, you know, a person who didn't have that skill wouldn't be able to connect, right? Because there are people who don't speak English, who are used to being overlooked, who are used to being condescended to, who are used to being treated as subhuman. And so when somebody takes the time to connect in their own language, even their emotional, the emotional way that they opened up would allow possibilities for their care that maybe wouldn't have been, you know, available to somebody else, especially, you know, he was dealing with people with brain injuries. So that affects like emotional expression and, you know, all these things.
As someone with brain injuries, that connects with
really exactly.
I got hit in the brain a bunch with a bus. I lost a bunch of my brain meat. I'm not super good with my memory. Again, the only reason anyone advocated for me was because I was literally working in a law office at the time. If I wasn't, like, no one would have advocated for me.
My husband once had gotten a surgery, and he found out later that his anesthesiologist wasn't covered by his insurance, and they charged him, like, $15,000. How is he supposed to know that?
That's this so guy, crazy.
He doesn't, like, no this is one not a tells person me, that you know about.
And then everyone tells you later, oh, just like challenge the bill. And it's like, if you are sick or dealing with things, Hoopst has the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Well, first of all, thank you so much, both of you, for obviously like being so open and vulnerable and sharing these things with us. This episode was like really, it resonated. It was really powerful, and it dealt with like so much of the conflicts of people dealing with loss. And so again, thank you so much for coming here, sharing your personal stories. Please tell people where they can find you online and find more of these amazing stories that you tell.
What am I allowed to say?
Whatever you want. Hype it up.
All right.
Depends on the studio.
Screw that NDA. Yeah.
Friend-DA? No, that isn't working on podcast.
So I'm currently working on a pilot for Disney Plus, co-creating with David Lowery, who's awesome. He's really lovely, genuinely. I want this public. He's an amazing man. Having amazing time with that. I'm currently on a show that I can't tell you anything about.
Ooh.
Toast. So apologies.
Love this for you.
Oh, thank you.
That's
exciting.
And then actually I have a feature that kind of talks about dysfunctional Indian American families that I'm slated to direct, and I have a really awesome producer and hopefully going to get the ball on that rolling soon.
Awesome.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. And me, I'm, you know, just getting more gigs for television, for directing. I have my second feature that I've been ready to make, but still working and writing on it. You know, I was in the Sundance Film 2 lab for it. So I'm kind of trying to still get that together.
That's an accomplishment in and of itself. You. So, yeah.
You just bypass that.
Yeah. Oh, not me and all my friends failing to get into Sundance for the third year in a row. Heidi's casually developing her second feature. Yeah, that's huge.
Trying.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And then still producing at Fresh Air because they're such a nice group of people and I love them. So, I have to, you know, go where the good people are. So,
oh, it's so
Heidi, good. I'm totally going to hit you up for a tour of that office eventually when we're allowed to go into offices again.
Yes.
I mean, I might also.
Terry Gross.
I love that.
Terry Gross fan club. So. What?
Don't even talk to me about Terry Gross.
Okay. Forever. <It's fine.
laughs> Well, thank you so much, Sahej and Heidi, for taking the time to sit down with us today and talk about your awesome episode, The Killer Inside. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
Yo, that was so good. They are just like so talented, and the fact that they were both so incredibly vulnerable and open with talking about their stuff while also being like super funny. And we know that they're very talented. This was so good.
It was such a good conversation, Danielle. And like to hear the deep motivations that came to create this episode that also had like exposed organs and spurting blood in it. I just love it. It's where I live. And it was so cool. They were able to take that experience and like translate it into an incredibly entertaining horror episode that was also super, super thought provoking. So I loved it. Just a fan over here.
Coming up, we're joined by hosts of the Scream Queen podcast, Tommy Pico and Drea Washington.
Joining us now, Tommy Pico and Drea Washington. Tommy is a poet and author of IRL, Nature Poem, Junk, and Feed. He also writes for the television series Reservation Dogs. Tommy co-hosts the horror-based podcast Scream Queens with self-proclaimed devoted film nerd, Drea Washington. Scream Queens is a podcast about scary movies from people not normally depicted in scary movies. Well, hi, Tommy and Drea. It is so great to have you on our podcast. We love your podcast, Scream, Queen, exclamation point. So this episode of Two Sentence Horror Stories, The Killer Inside, right, had an interesting twist on the killer. And I was getting really into this Twitter thread I saw the other day about inverted ghost stories, right? So a ghost story where it turns out the protagonist is been dead all along. Spoiler alert, The Sixth Sense is an inverted ghost story. We're like, should we do a spoiler alert on a 20-year-old movie? But I'm just going to be kind and say that. So Do you have a favorite inverted ghost story or a ghost story where it turns out the ghost is not who you would expect?
What was that? Was that one Nicole Kidman movie where her kids are dead?
The others.
I had to say that one. I mean, because she was giving me like such chaotic bottom vibes that whole movie. And I was like, oh, I get it because your kids are dead. All right.
Yeah. That's a classic. What about you, Drea? Do you have one where it's you all along?
Well, it wasn't, I guess she was a monster sort of, and she was kind of a ghost. I don't know. In The Orphan, you didn't realize that little girl was like this monster woman from like, that threw me for sure.
Yeah,
that's a disturbing movie.
That movie made, we were talking about that in our Killer Kids episode.
It is like such a classic trope to be like, oh, I'm a child. But then like, you take off my ring and my head. You know, like such a horror trope.
I mean, it's sort of like the she's all that of it all. You know, it's like all of a sudden you take off her glasses and she's a beauty queen.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you take off her ribbon and she's 40.
This is a seamless segue to my favorite segment on your podcast. Why is this bitch still alive?
Yo.
So please talk to me about that, because I can't tell you how many times I've yelled at a horror movie, why is this bitch still alive? She's being too dumb.
Yeah, we tried to, Dre and I wanted to, anytime we got together, because I've been knowing Dre for like 10, 15 years now, anytime we got together, the first thing we talked about was the last scary shit that we saw. When it came time to like putting together the show and creating segments for it, our most recent season, we were recording in the studio again for that brief period of time when it seemed like everything was going to be okay. And then, you know, Omicron came and said no. Mm. We wanted to come up with some new segments. We kind of did like a little bar research session. And it was like, do you ever feel like there's people who just, because we already had a segment called Pour One Out, where someone didn't live as long as we wanted them to. So it was like, what about the inverse of that, where it's like somebody who lived way too long. And for my very first example was the mean girl in that Friday the 13th, The New Blood, with like the Carrie with the telekinetic power. There's like a mean girl there, and she lives to the very end. Like, this bitch needed to go one or two.
Well, I could think of a lot of different movies where it's just like unnecessary characters, you know, people. Okay, what's the last thing I just saw? I feel like there was somebody in Malignant that could have gone that didn't need to be there.
Oh, yeah. Well, when she parked on the side of the cliff, that's when I yelled, why is this bitch?
That was very necessary to the plot.
Oh, you disagree?
I thought that was crucial. I bought into that because, you know.
I'm a big fan of any brunette in an 80s horror movie because they're all me. They're all wearing a flannel shirt with frizzy hair about to be murdered. So that's my... I'm like, those are my people. I guess I would say maybe this is old school, but the 1970s Suspiria, because she lives, but it gets real bad. And I like somebody who escapes, like, and their mind is broken and they're like covered in goo and they are just like laughing because they're barely making it out alive.
Well, and like this episode is like such a there's so much happening. So we do want to know, like, the killer inside. What was y'all's thoughts while watching the episode?
I was really into that first act reveal that I wasn't expecting. I mean, Drea pretty much sees everything coming. So was that something that you saw coming, Drea?
No. I mean, they don't give you, it was 20 minutes. So I felt like we all discovered things as they were happening together, which was nice. You know, there was, I guess I could have read into it a bit more, but no, I did like how it all kind of revealed itself from act to act.
And there was also an aspect of it that was kind of like, you don't know what you're capable of under the right circumstances, like in under desperation, like what are you actually capable of? I mean, I don't know if I was going to cut out a portion of somebody's liver, but under duress, who knows what I might do?
Yeah, I was thinking back to the first sentence, which is, I wanted all of her. And then it says, but she just wanted parts of me. So basically what you have to tie together is that they were in a long relationship and he had a bunch of money, and then some kind of way. And so the father and the boyfriend both have the same blood type and they both have the same kind of illness. And the boyfriend goes behind her back and gets, you know, he pays over budget to get the liver that her father was next in line to receive. I mean, that's a lot to unpack in that, but I was able to believe that and to believe to how it got to that point. She made that sacrifice for her dad. So I don't know if that heart attack was necessary. Like, like, I don't know.
Okay. So like, whom do you pick?
Mm-hmm. She made a choice, and her boyfriend seemed, that is shady that her boyfriend did that. And I'm not mad at her for going to the lengths that she did. I don't.
Okay. So let's dive into that. So do you think Shiraz is a victim? And if not, when does she become the villain? Right. Shiraz is our main.
I don't think she ever becomes a villain to me. To me, she isn't. She's just not a villain.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I like that. Defend that some more. Even though she's cutting open her boyfriend in her basement, you were I can see that.
He drove her to it. Yeah, I think he drove her to it. And then when she breaks down what it's going to be like for her father to go through, you know, him losing his mental faculties and all his organs are going to shut down. And, you know, just like, yeah, okay. And I'm here for it. So
I'm going to, you know, pointedly disagree with my co-host over here, as we are wont to do on our very own show. And I don't think she was a villain until the father told her, this isn't what I want. And then she decided to continue with the procedure. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, she wasn't doing it for her father. She was doing it so she didn't have to lose him. And it wasn't about her dad at all, my opinion. Hot take, spicy take.
It's still about her dad, but it goes into a selfish, she didn't do it in a way that he would have preferred. And I don't, it doesn't make her a villain, like you said, Tommy, but
it does though.
You just said it doesn't make her a villain.
I think it does though.
I think you said it didn't, but anyway, so back on to what I was saying. I don't think she's a villain. I think that her ultimate, her intentions are too good. And he could have gone another way to find that organ. He didn't have to go there to take it from her daddy.
He really didn't have to take it from her daddy. If he had $200,000 to spend on a liver,
he could have gone. He could have got a black market liver, and he would have been fine.
That's right.
So today on blackmarketliverpodcast.com.
I'm a big fan of medical horror. So the stuff where I was like, oh, there's a lady in the basement and, there's random medical equipment and there's an open torso surgery with nobody to help you. Like, I live for that trope in horror. So how did the medical horror of this hit you? Did it gross you out? Are you here for it? Do you watch weird things about organs being trapped in your body like me, or...
I'm not a human centipede girl. That's not my preferred method of horror. No one is.
I mean, there are a couple of people who are, but I'm sorry, I do not trust human centipede people.
Don't shade on my doctor fetish by comparing it to human centipede. There are lots of good medical horror that aren't pooped to mouth.
I don't trust people who are poop mouths.
Dee, are you a medical horror girl?
I have my limits, but again, my limits are definitely like, I don't want to see like Tusk or a freaking human centipede. I'm really not into that.
Well, thank you so much, Tommy and Drea. We've really enjoyed having you both on the show. This has been so much fun. Let our audience know how they can follow you online.
I'm Hey Girl Hey. That's HEYGRLHEY on Instagram. And you can find us at Scream Queen Podcast on Instagram as well.
And I'm Tommy Teebs Pika. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HEYTEBS on Instagram because I deleted Twitter.
Oh, he made a choice. Love that. Love it. Love that for you. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time. This was so fun. We love chatting with you. And yeah, listen to Scream Queen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Danielle. What a fantastic conversation with Tommy and Drea.
Yo, they are so good. Their podcast is amazing. It's always nice to like talk to people who are super horror fans, know what we're talking about, and like we just get to like shoot the stuff with them.
I know. I like grossing out my fellow horror stans. I think it's a point of pride.
Yes, I get it.
I love it. Thank you to Sahej Sethi, Heidi Simon, Tommy Pico, and Drea Washington for joining us today for a wonderful discussion.
This is Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast. Catch you next time. Thank you for listening to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast is a Stage 13 original series hosted by me, Danielle Radford.
And me, Megan Rosati. Don't forget to watch Season 3 of Two Sentence Horror Stories on the CW and CWTV.com and stream Seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix.
Check out more on the show at stage13.com and be sure to follow Two Sentence Horror Stories on Instagram at Two Sentence Horror Stories for the latest updates on the podcast and show and on our Facebook page at Two Sentence Horror Stories to connect with other fans of the show and share your thoughts on this season.